Michelle, let me know when you're ready. All right, good morning. I'll call to order the regular scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting for this Tuesday, October 25th, 2016. And I would ask if everybody please join the board as we honor America with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Well, good morning again. Thank you for being here. First item on our agenda, as always, is public comment number one. It's an opportunity for members of the public to address topics on today's agenda. Is there anybody wishing to do so? And seeing no one moving to the microphone, we'll move on to departmental reports. This is Veterans Affairs Quarterly Report. Brett.
All right. I have Pat with me today.
Hi, Pat. Thanks for coming over and joining us.
Morning, all right, Bill. So,
first of all, I'm not the chairman. I'm the secretary, but he was unable to make it today, and he asked if I would show up and address the Board of Supervisors. Last week, we went to the school in, that they have a fall school for the commissioners and for the directors, and four of the five of us were able to make it. It was an interesting topic, and as always, so Story County does participate, whereas some of the other counties just fail to show up. So I think that's good that we're in charge of the veterans and take care of it. The other thing I want to do is thank the Board of Supervisors for going from a three-person board to a five-person board. It's been very productive. Starting in July, the two ladies that came on board, they're very good people. I applaud you on your selection. I think you did very good on those. And we're working well together, and coming up November 18th is going to be the supermarket for Veterans Affairs. So if you know of anybody who hasn't gotten on board with that, send them over to the Moose on that Friday. That's it for me.
And I brought plenty of flyers here on the table if anybody wants to. If you know a veteran that you want to give a flyer to. Hey, also on office updates, Aaron Rewers came on board doing veterans benefits in July, and she also attended the school last week with us, and she's doing real good. We're going to get her nationally accredited in January at a state school that they're going to have in Texas. And then also Mike Brown, he opened up an office too from the Vet Center, and he's there every other Wednesday. I think it was the third Wednesday he was there, he stopped in. He says, Brett, I'm going to have to talk about maybe expanding my hours. Or, you know, third day, expanding his hours to maybe a Wednesday, Thursday, or every Wednesday, and have another counselor come up. So kind of working on that, and I don't know if that's good or bad, but we'll get those hours extended so we can help our veterans. Mm-hmm. And, and by the way, last week at the school, they go around how many from your county, and there was no other county in the state of Iowa that had six people there. So.
And were you all wearing your good-looking red shirts?
We were in blue that day, yeah. We wore our short-sleeved blue ones for the Navy, I guess.
There were seven of us.
Who's seven?
Oh, wait a minute, that's right. There should have been seven. I'm sorry.
Yeah, yeah.
I was lying.
So today we're dressed in Marine Corps red because we were in navy blue last week. So to go on with a quarterly report, of course, it covers July the 1st to the end of September. Under county benefits, we've seen three veterans, two for rent assistance, and then, the other one was a family of a veteran for funeral assistance. So the rent was a total of $1,050, and funeral assistance was $1,840 for a grand total of $2,890 for the quarter spent under county benefits. Now under state and federal, and even counting those right there, we've seen a total of 200. I've never had the number come out just perfect like that, but it's 200. We've seen 26 World War II veterans, 20 Korea veterans, 82 Vietnam veterans, 12 Persian Gulf, 8 Cold War or peacetime, 14 OIF, OEF, and OND, 38 surviving spouses of veterans, and a majority of those are in nursing homes, 40 enrolled in VA health care, and filed 20 new claims. Also to note, talking about World War II in Korea, we had two, it's just unbelievable, really, that I had a, we had two veterans that had never received a medal. One was World War II, and one was Korea. So the World War II veteran had waited 70 years, but he got three medals presented to him. And that was just in the last month. And then last week, we had also a Korea veteran, same thing, only that was 63 years that he waited, and he had three medals also presented to him and their families, you know. So that, you know, that's pretty, that's a neat part of my job to be able to go out and do something like that. And this was with Senator Grassley's office. Events during the last quarter, did some outreach, was in a, had the office in a couple of parades, the 4th of July parade and Lincoln Highway Days parade, and then also outreaching at least once a week, probably 8 hours a week is spent in nursing homes and assisted living. Kind of a tough part of the job right there is going in and working in with that age group.
Right, but greatly appreciated. Sometimes those toughest things are the most appreciated, Brent.
Yeah. Upcoming events, well, for one thing, next week we have the newsletter, which you each have a copy of that. We have a newsletter going out. We have a total of 3,300 this time, going out to Story County veterans. A lot of times, you know, what's needed, these are going into the homes of veterans. Sometimes the veteran may not read this newsletter, but guess what? His spouse may read it. And so once the newsletter goes out, we just really pick up with visiting with veterans in the office. So actually, saving a little bit of money, 669 are going out via email. And then we also have some going to surviving spouses' email, and then the rest. I think we're at maybe a little over 3,000 that's actually going, or a little over 2,500 that's actually going in the mail. So save a little bit of money that way with trying to get some folks to sign up on our email listing.
Brett, how many do we print? So you tell me
3,300.
So do we have any that we take to the Legions or the VFWs or anything like that and leave?
Yeah, they each get one. And then also, I keep like 100 in the office that are just, they're not folded or anything for people that come in. Recently, after that goes out, I always have to ask people when they come in, did you receive this? Now, 3 months down the road, that doesn't work. But right away, that does work, if they received it or not. And if they didn't, I give them one and give them on our list.
Sure, I'm just sitting here wondering if there would be potential value in getting a half dozen or so to each one of the locations where we know our veterans gather regularly. That may be a great opportunity for somebody to sit down and thumb through them, and I think it'd be negligible cost if we added, say, 100 and just split them up and got them everywhere. I just asked maybe the commission talk about that. Somewhere.
Yeah, yep. Okay. And then also we take some to the supermarket. Have some there, too. But, yeah, no, we have get about the American Legions. So supermarket is November the 18th. Of course, the board's invited. We always ask the chair if you're available that day to come and help us open up. We do an opening at 9, and then also kind of like to have the commission chair kind of help out with that. But if you're not available that day, Rick, maybe somebody else could.
Yeah, I believe I'm available, and if I'm available, absolutely I'll be there. And if not, my counterpart over here to my right is right in his wheelhouse.
Wait, those
I've been there a couple times. Yeah. The only other, I think that's the same day that our centralized juvenile detention board meets. So
I think I'm available.
But
I'll handle it. Okay. Yep.
But I could get back late in the afternoon.
Great. Another event we're going to be involved in for the second time is Scoop a Soup. It's November the 15th, 11:30 to 1:30 at Ames City Hall. raising awareness for hunger and homelessness. So we'll have a Story County VA. We'll have a little a booth there with some information there, and we see some veterans at that event. Sometimes we don't, but we see people that know veterans in need.
Yeah, that was a question that I was going to ask you about our outreach to the homelessness population. I know a few years back, you know, you spent time actually going to the campsites, the area where they were located, south of 16th Street. And occasionally I see a few around the community. And is this talked about at your veterans' statewide meeting at all much?
Well, yeah, some communities will do a outreach event just for homelessness. Mm-hmm. We did one annually for a couple of years. We just didn't have that many people that come to it for some reason. So we changed that to Veterans Awareness Day, and that's what we do in May. And not only is it set up for a homeless veteran or supposed to be homeless, but it's set up also for all veterans to attend. So,
was there any report at all about the statewide impact of Homebase Iowa program that's now in place, and where, you know, we're trying to find employment for returning veterans and so forth? Are you getting any?
We've asked the state for some numbers across the state, and we haven't received any yet.
Okay.
I don't know if how long the program has to be in place before they actually have data.
Okay.
Keep
asking that, because I think that's important.
Right. And then also in, and I should be talking, Renee's not here, I should be talking to Renee about this, but normally the Treasurer's Office will collect for the Iowa Veterans Home the month of November, and then her and I will go over and meet with the Commandant at the Veterans Home and literally take a truckload of items over there. They don't take any used clothing. It's got to be, if you donate clothing, it has to be new. But I'm going to get an email out the items that they are in need of right now.
Good. Well, thank you. Yeah. Marty, anything? Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Pat.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Yep.
Next item is consideration of minutes, and we are just dealing with the October 18th minutes.
Move approval.
Second.
Any additions, corrections, notations? Clinton.
Aye.
Chitty.
Aye.
Sanders, aye. October 18th minutes pass. Personnel actions as listed.
Move to approve.
Second.
Motion and a second. Chitty.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Sanders, aye. Personnel actions pass. Consent agenda, board, two notations. One, please add road closure 1721. And under item three, please note that for our animal control agreements, they're effective through July 1st, 2017, not effective on July 1st, 2017.
Move approval with no changes.
Second.
A motion and second. Clint?
Aye.
Fee?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Consent agenda passed. No public hearing items today, so that leads us to additional items. First one of those is discussion and consideration of receipt of easement funds. Let's see. So background here, I asked Lisa to send an invoice to Energy Transfer Partners probably a week ago, 10 days ago. So our agreement with them for mitigation from the pipeline crossing the Heart of Iowa Nature Trail is $1.6 million, payable 30 days after all the permitting and everything was done. So we were to that point. We sent them an invoice. And at that time, when I asked Lisa to go ahead and send that invoice, we said, well, we better start to figure out exactly where that $1.6 million is going when it comes in. And that's the purpose of this conversation, to start to give some direction there.
And keep it up for you. The sooner the better, because we got the check.
We got the check already. Well, that's nice.
Correct. My understanding from what you've just described and from the whole conversation of this is it's not reimbursement. It's not anything like that. It's actual dollars came in as an easement. So my question to you was, well, what are we going to do with those funds? I put a couple options down here. I'm open to other suggestions, obviously. We could deposit it in the general fund of the county. Conservation primarily gets their funding from the general fund of the county. Okay. We can commit or assign some of those dollars. I haven't had a conversation with Mike as to what the dollars that he spent have been on repairing anything from the Bakken pipeline. So I'm not sure if there are dollars that he's being that have been spent for that trail repair. But we could commit or assign some of those funds for other purposes or in the general fund. If you commit funds, you have to uncommit funds to spend them. Mm-hmm. If you assign funds, they can be assigned and unassigned easily without...
Yes, so commitment is stronger.
Yes.
Commitment is not completely binding, but it's stronger right. than assigning.
Right.
Assigning is stronger than just putting it in the general fund right. and doing nothing with it.
Right.
So the intent of these dollars... was as a mitigation payment for conservation, directly related to trail improvement, but it was bigger and broader than that from my perspective. It was trail improvement, water quality. I'd like to see these funds or part of these funds be leveraged and used possibly in the securing of grants, kind of as our portion of securing grant dollars. But really, in my mind, we need to get weigh-in from the Conservation Board. Because these are very, while there's nothing in law that requires this to be conservation dollars, these very clearly, in my mind, are conservation dollars. So I'd like to see this board pass a resolution, not today, I'd like to see it come back. I'd like to see these funds, now that we have them, go into the general fund, but us come back quickly with a resolution committing these funds to conservation with some very specific kind of categories for conservation to use them. I'm going to be opposed to us utilizing these dollars for something that's already approved. I'd like it to be new kind of projects that conservation would not otherwise be able to do if we didn't secure these dollars, but I'd really like to get conservation to weigh in. Wayne, what are your thoughts? You're our representative there.
I think that your analysis is right on. Right after we discussed the prospect of the verbal agreement that they were going to commit these funds 30 days after everything was finalized, there was discussion by with me, with Director Mike, and a couple of the board members. It was never brought before the full board, but... initially, there was that discussion about whether they would be committed just toward trail and improvement on that particular portion of land by paving the trail. My comment at that point was, you know, that let's not necessarily make a decision right now that says that they all have to go towards that. Because there could be other things that might surface, and so what I gathered from that was that he would like the opportunity to visit, either with obviously with the Conservation Board and a representative of the board, because ultimately whatever decision they make is going to be brought back to us for final approval. But I do think that the idea, he knows off right up front that it's going to go into the general fund. And he would like to see that they are committed somewhat for projects that is going to benefit conservation. But I think that your analysis and where you and how you have discussed that really merits Lisa and yourself in this category, even though I'm the liaison there, to have that conversation so that we can get some buy-in. But I certainly would agree that I think they would be really pleased if there's a specific caveat, but also some flexibility.
Sure. Yeah. I think it makes perfect sense. Marty?
So these funds are in the general at the moment?
They're in a desk form. They haven't been deposited anywhere.
They're sitting on her desk right now. On your desk. Okay.
They're locked in the cabinet. Quite
I saw three people get up and start to have three people.
Well, I have
got to get by Christy, and she won't let him in there.
I have comfort in us maintaining
some control as through an assignment of these funds into the general, that we would be well advised to be trusting to the conservation board, that they would know best what are the needs throughout the county, and we could offer them an opportunity to come to us with projects unforeseen in their abilities to do, because now we have monies to do them. I know Wayne comes back and talks about how his meetings go and the discussions that are had, and the thing is, these people aren't for a loss for ideas, and I would trust that if given this amount of money, they could come to us with new ideas that would serve the county, as opposed to committing them in a way that the board would decide without any consultation. So I would seek an assignment.
You know, the other option is depositing the Conservation Land Acquisition and Capital Projects Fund. That's a fairly new fund. It's only been here, we've only been utilizing it probably 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
The Conservation Board had come to this Board of Supervisors and asked for all the camping revenues, as opposed to going to the general fund, to go to a Conservation Land Improvement Fund, Capital Project and Land Improvement Fund. So far, they've spent some of those dollars on the Jennet's purchase and Dakin's Lake. They've spent some on the Hickory Grove waterline, some on the restroom remodel, and some on grant matches. That is a budgetary fund of the county, but it is specifically for the purpose of Conservation Land Acquisition and Capital Projects Fund.
And that may make perfect sense for ultimately these dollars to end up there, but I don't think we have enough information at this point to deposit them straight in there. If we deposit them in the general fund, we can always move them to this fund later. So what I'm going to suggest to the board, if you guys are okay with it, is that we ask Lisa to go ahead and deposit the $1.6 million in the general fund, and that she work with Mike Cox, our county attorney, and I'd actually ask Deb Shildroff to sit in on behalf of the board in drafting a resolution to bring back to this board for consideration in his time. If it means next week we can do that, that'd be great. And if it means somewhere in the future, we just don't do anything with that 1.6 until we get some resolution before us. Does that sound reasonable?
Certainly.
County attorney, does that sound reasonable?
Mm-hmm. So you're seeking a motion for an assignment?
I don't even know that we need a motion.
No,
in this. It's just direction.
I just want direction
at this point.
All right.
Yeah.
So no action. I mean, you're doing what you would do. Right. Put it in the general fund.
Right.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah, more coming up. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Laura Solson, 1705 Buchanan. I just wanted to remind everyone as we go forward that I recall the discussion of the $1.6 million being kind of a compensation for not only possible damage to the Heart of Iowa Trail, but related to some tree removal and land upset that would have occurred to private landowners, so that as the discussion about whatever we do related to conservation keeps in mind that maybe a good place would be to put it toward a project or grants that work with restoration and water quality. I know we can only do our public areas, not our private areas, but just as everyone starts to talk about that, to remember part of how that 1.6 million was presented at the time that it was offered.
Yeah, and so if you got that as that it was compensation for anything other than mitigation for crops in Iowa Nature Trail, that's inaccurate.
That's inaccurate.
Oh, okay.
But what you bring up in terms of what the county and county conservation can choose to do with those dollars, I don't think anything that we're doing would preclude exactly what you're talking about, but I just want us to be clear that that wasn't compensation for anything.
No.
Okay. No. I'll go back and because I know that was in the list of what conservation had originally presented to.
Think, so we're talking about two different things.
No,
one is things we can do, which you're 100% right.
Right.
The second one, and where I'm disagreeing with you a little, is how the 1.6 came to exist. What it came from and for.
Okay.
And it was not compensation for lost trees or anything like that.
One of the thought processes in the conversation, and we each had an individual conversation prior to this agreed upon figure, they knew that there was ongoing discussion about the likelihood of wanting to pave a portion of this area.
Right.
And they thought, well, if we chose, you know, some of those dollars could go towards that purpose. And I specifically at that point said those will be decisions that the board will make in consultation with the Conservation Board in terms of how those dollars would actually be used. But they thought that that might be, something that that could be used in that particular area. But no decision was actually made at that point in time about exactly where the dollars what the dollars would be used for.
No, and I understand no decision was made. I'll just have to go back and review the tape from the day that their attorney was here. Okay, thank you.
Thanks. Anybody else? Okay. Seeing no one, we'll move on. Next item is discussion consideration of revised drug-free workplace drug and alcohol testing policy after our 7-day review. Alyssa Wigdahl. Hi, Alyssa.
Good morning.
No. We need any feedback?
I had one email.
Okay.
Saying that she's read a lot of them, it looks fine, and she found a typo on the first page, so I appreciate
good.
That. Other than that, I did not get any feedback. I sent it out last Tuesday evening, I believe. So the only thing that was changed from the prior policy would be the pre-employment testing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so for everybody who is just joining this conversation after, this is the third or fourth time that we've talked about it in a board meeting. What we're doing here is we're saying that anyone, before they're hired by Story County, is subject to a drug screening. Right?
Right.
Questions, comments?
No, it's the world we find ourselves in. You find that out in the private sector, and I believe you have found that to be the case with other government departments that, on your outreach, so I have confidence going forward with this.
Yeah, and like you, I didn't receive any correspondence from anyone that had any questions regarding it.
Absolutely. So, I take a motion to approve after the 7-day review.
I would so move that we approve this revised drug-free workplace policy to be taken up after 7 days.
This would make it effect.
This would make it effective. Okay. I will second the motion.
We have a motion and a second to make this policy now effective. Any further discussion? Chief.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. It is effective. Thanks, Alyssa.
Thank you for what you did.
Next item is discussion and consideration of applications submitted by the City of Slayer for the Story County Facade Grant Improvement Program. Leanne. And I don't see Jennifer here today. I thought we had Jennifer.
Me too.
Morning, Leanne.
How are you?
Well, thank you. Give me a moment, please. Well, for the board and some members of the public, this presentation may look very familiar. Since in early October, you did take action, pardon me, on a request from the City of Cambridge, but I'll breeze through those, but I do want to reiterate some of the high points. The facade improvement grant program was set up to provide financial assistance specifically to city governments. They act as the applicant in these types of applications. They identify private commercial enterprises within their city limits that are in need or wanting facade improvements. And the goal is to support the revitalization of our business districts. It's a one-time reimbursement grant up to 20% or not more than $10,000 of a total project cost, specifically for facade improvements. And the grant guidelines has a list of those types of allowable improvements. The city is required to provide matching funds equal to or greater than that provided by the county. And then total disbursement. This current fiscal year was budgeted at $10,000. And in early October, you did approve a little over $8,000 to the City of Cambridge. That leaves $1,798.80 in the budget announced, and I'll come back to that when we get to the request. Again, one-time reimbursement of up to $10,000, and I just want to go to this one. Eligibility, city is the applicant, and those communities under 2,000 persons according to the 2010 census. ineligible are residential structures, nonprofits, nonprofit entities, or projects that did begin prior to application approval. There's an important distinction, though, and especially if you look at this application, too, some work had been done,
yes.
And that is basically to make the building structurally sound. So there's some gray area that the board needs to keep in mind in that.
And speaking about that, though, and I noticed in the application that's listed here, it talked about, you know, what had basically been completed. But as you, so you see that within this total, that's somewhat of a reimbursement of what has already been paid out all day?
And I'll get that slide shortly, but what's been already identified as completed has been taken out of the request.
That's what I thought.
Okay.
I'm going to go right to the previous later then. The 501 Main Street. Well, the current owners are actually the City of Slater, according to our tax records, but it's being transferred right now to Roger Oslin and Artie Drummond. Similar situation in Cambridge, too. And this should actually look familiar because this was transferred from Story County to City of Slater in the past few years. One of the old county sheds that was transferred.
Uh-huh.
The blue square in the middle of the screen is the proposed location. Total project cost is $22,200, and Wayne, this gets to your point you just made. $5,000 of work has already been completed, and that was noted in the application. That's removed out of that
$22,200.
They did replace worn-out rotten areas of the walls for structure. That was $3,000 in exterior elevation and grading. Really, when you look at the building trade industry, a lot of things have to be done even before they can begin facade improvements.
So it's not 22.2, it's 27.2, and you took the 5 back out to get to 22.2.
Right.
Okay.
Slater match would be minimum of $4,400 because that is the maximum allowable by Story County. And then the remainder would be $13,400 by the property. Just some images that were submitted by the applicant. This is looking at the building from you're standing at that southwest corner looking towards the northeast. And you do see where stuff has been removed and some new boards in there to maintain the structural integrity of the structure. Then this is looking to the northeast, or northwest, pardon me. You're looking at the northeast corner, though, of the building. And then this is looking directly due west, and this is the northern part of the building. And then they did provide some elevations. Now, this is exactly where you were before, but looking at the proposed elevation would look like post-construction. And then transitioning back down to the south, looking at the north elevation, looking at south elevation, looking north. And then back over to the west. As always, the terms of agreement are specified on the application and required to be signed by the applicant. And it does indicate that this is a reimbursement grant. So upon finalization of the project, then items would be submitted for reimbursement to Story County. With that, are there any questions? I do note one thing. So in the remaining grant funding, there's $17,000, as I stated, so it's a little under $18,000. That means a deficit of $2,601.
$1,700.
I said 1,000.
Yep.
A deficit of $2,601.20 that has not been budgeted.
If we funded 100% of this, yeah. But two caveats there. One, we've approved the 8,000 plus maximum to Cambridge. We don't know for certain that that's what it's going to come in at. We know that that's the maximum. If we approve this, our maximum would be the 4,400, but we don't know for certain that the project would actually get to that point. Worst case scenario, or I guess best case scenario, if you're trying to improve your main streets, is both of them would go to the full approved amounts, and then we'd have to go find $2,000 roughly in order to become whole in this budgetary line item.
Okay.
Do we know what they're talking about putting in here?
No. Well, I was hoping Jennifer would be here today so she could answer those questions.
Well, okay, but here's, again, another example of whether you call it timing or what have you, but, you know, they went back to the drawing board, reassessed where they were. We made the decision to approve the initial request. I think this clearly is an example of a building in an area that fits the criteria that what we've laid out that can make it certainly much more functional. So I like to see, you know, something like this, because this again is clear evidence that this is going to be a major improvement to that only that particular building, but for the surrounding area as well.
Well, it's our hope, Wayne, Marty, you weren't with us when we gave this building back to, gave it to the city of Slater. It used to be where our secondary roads equipment was.
Right.
And it was our hope that that building could be revitalized and become a thriving component of downtown Slater again. I'm excited to see the project. I'll remind both of you that when we budgeted $10,000 in this line item, it was because we had never used $10,000. What was the most we've ever used in this line item? We've been doing it 4 years now. 3 years.
3,500 or 3,800.
Yeah, so we thought we were budgeting enough to handle it. It's actually exciting to me that we've got our small towns coming forward to do this. I would sure be in favor, if you guys are comfortable with it, of us approving this and seeing if we can help our main streets in the small towns start to come back.
So we have to have in the motion indicate the dollar amount that that we're talking about, and here we already know basically what it is, but as you were indicating earlier.
So you could either approve the application as submitted, in which case you'd be approving up to $3,400, or if you want to approve something less than that, you need to note it as part of your motion, up to a certain amount.
Okay.
Yeah. Marty, you got anything?
This is one of the things that you have, Bud, to go on this side of the county and move about in this communities and see that sometimes what to help a community point to another one to say, this is what they did, this is how they did it, and this is the result that they had because of it. And sometimes there's comfort in the fact that nobody wants to be first, but once somebody has done it, that it's an easier sell. And I look forward to having that conversation in Zering tonight.
I think that's really, really well said. I think that this is really exciting that we're starting to see some momentum on this. That was our intent of putting it in. You don't put it in there hoping you're not going to use it for something like this.
Yeah. All right. So therefore, I would move the application by Slater and the dollar amount up to the $4,400 for the completion of this project.
And $4,440 is what they requested.
Well, they could probably come up with the $44. Okay, add it for it.
Okay, so $44.40 is the vote.
Get it back for you.
Now you can second it if you'd like, Mark.
This is a worthy second, I agree.
Absolutely. Further discussion?
No, again, thank you, Leanne, and all the others that played a part in this and working with Slater in this endeavor.
I'll say it. Clinton?
Aye.
Gene?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. It passes. Thanks, Leanne. Let's see. Next item is discussion and consideration of Nolan Residential Parcel Subdivision. And please note that we're talking about Resolution 1733, even though it doesn't appear on our agenda. It was part of our meeting packet. Hi, Jerry.
Good morning. As you stated, this is a residential parcel subdivision, Nolan Residential Parcel Subdivision. The property owner is located at 17185 George Washington Carver. The property owner's name is Linda Merkin. This is SUB 09-16, Resolution 1733. The residential parcel subdivision is located in Franklin Township, between the cities of Gilbert and Ames. It's outside of the Ames Urban Fringe Plan, but just west of the city of Gilbert. Surrounding land use, the property is outlined in red for you. Contains about 36 acres. As I mentioned, it's just west of the corporate limits of the city of Gilbert. Their southwest corner of their corporate limits is at the intersection of George Washington Carver and 170th Street. Land use, for the most part, is agricultural. There is, however, six single-family residential dwellings within a quarter of a mile. Most of those are in the unincorporated area of the county. I think there's one that's inside the city. In 1956, I believe, there was a little portion that was taken out of the northeast corner. Northern Natural Gas has a substation at that location. In 1996, there was the second division, first formal division, after zoning was established. The property owner's mother's dwelling and farmstead was split out from that quarter. It's about a one-acre parcel. Zoning, for the most part, is A1 agricultural district for the subject property and surrounding land use. As I mentioned, subject property is 36 acres. What is being proposed here is a two-lot division. The first lot would contain the property owner's dwelling. There's a couple of accessory buildings on the property, which are in the southeast corner of the parcel. And then a proposed new lot two, which would be set aside for the property owner's son to build a single-family dwelling. So currently on the south third, there's about 11 acres in CRP program, and they recently set aside an additional 18, which for the most part puts the balance of the land in that CRP program. And again, the area that the house and the outbuildings occupy is about a 1.5 acre area. This is the subdivision plat that was submitted by Stumble and Associates Land Surveying. Again, lot one would contain the property owner's dwelling and accessory structures. Proposed lot two would be just under 6 acres. And again, lot one would be around a 30 acre parcel. We're into the site photos. This is the property owner's dwelling. Garage. This is looking back out on George Washington Carver. There's a gravel access and drive. That's the main access into the property. This is looking to the south. To the right of the screen is the property owner's mother's dwelling. The plan for that short term within a year or two is to remove this house and that 1 acre parcel, adjoin that back into the 30 acres that the property owner owns. So there's that dwelling. Garage, accessory structure, corn storage. This is looking to the south. You see the CRP ground. Looking to the north, there's the Northern Natural Gas substation that was in the northeast corner. This is looking west at the subject property from George Washington Carver. And then we're panning to the south at that 1.5 acre area where the dwelling and the accessory structures are located. This is looking west from the intersection of George Washington Carver and 170th Street. This is looking south from about the area where that proposed lot two would be. And then right across the street on the north side of the road is a house that was built in 2003. Residential parcel subdivision, this is from the Story County Land Development Regulations. It meets all these requirements. It's for residential purposes, both lots. Only two lots may be created. There is a dwelling on the property paying property taxes. They're not creating any streets, alleys, parks, dedicated open space. The both lots will be a minimum 1 acre in size. They will have frontage to public road, and no variances are being requested. We did send notices, provided interagency review information on this request. And we received one comment from engineering, which is that they need to apply for an access for that new house for lot two. Our department had questions about proposed use, a little bit about the CRP planning input there, information about the Northern Natural Gas Division, and then comments for the land surveying. We did send out notices to the property owners October 7. We received only one phone call back from the property owner on the east side of this development, had questions about it, but indicated that he had no objection about what was being proposed. We did also email the information to the City of Ames and the City of Gilbert. City of Ames contacted us by phone and said they had no position on this. They also did volunteer that they don't fully support residential parcel subdivisions because it does create a division and a future development for a single-family home. City of Gilbert did take action last night. They did waive their right to review the request. With that, these are some points to consider in review of this. The proposed division does meet all the requirements of the residential parcel subdivision in Chapter 87.08 of the Story County Land Development Regulations. This division is possible in part because it received very low LISA scores. With the inclusion of the 11 acres and the 18 that they're putting into the CRP, most of the Lot 1 will be in CRP program. The proposed dwelling that will be built on Lot 2 will be right across the street from an existing house that was built in 03.
When you say across the street, on the opposite side?
North side of 107.
Right, okay.
Mm-hmm. Again, the long-term plans for the dwelling that the property owner's mother lived in is to remove it within a year or two, and then that 1 acre will be adjoined with that 30-acre parcel. So whereas there's two single-family dwellings on this quarter corridor, there will be two.
Right, but that's not a requirement of what we're talking about doing here.
It's not a requirement.
I mean, if they get into this and they decide for whatever reason that they don't want to take that house down and don't want to combine that property, we're not setting forth that they would need to.
Right. It's okay. Just an added point.
Okay.
There's two now, and there will be two in the future. And then, two, we looked at the City of Gilbert's comprehensive plan. We did that also when we went through the C2C planning process. They're planning to grow southerly and easterly, and had no intention of growing westerly. So this division will likely be in the county for a long, long time. So with that leads us to our recommendation, which is to approve the Nolan Residential Parcel Subdivision. It's SUB 09-16, Resolution 17-33. I'd be happy to answer your questions.
I don't have any questions, but I'd love to hear from the landowners. Yeah. If Linda, if you, any of you have anything you'd like to address to us, and now would be the time.
I would assume you probably wouldn't understand the process that had to go through.
Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you. Actually, we're just here to provide any information or to address any concerns that any of you might have. Jerry and his staff have done an excellent job, and I would commend them on that. So if there's any questions or concerns, and my husband, Jim Noland, my son, Ben Noland, who's going to be building the house there, are also here today.
Could you explain, just for educational purposes, when we talk about CRP land, and these are usually agreements that the landowner basically has to designate a certain portion of land for that. Is there a designated time that you have to make sure that that land is set aside for? And what do you do at the end of that time slot? Do you have to reapply, in order to get the CRP credit? Because I think there is some type of cash reimbursement tied into that, isn't it?
Certainly. There is rent from USDA, right, that comes with that. Normally the CRP contracts are for 10 years. So we have 3 years left on the 12 acres that we have in CRP right now, and we intend to reapply for that. It's been a very good program because that soil is mostly Harbison Webster soil, which is mucky. And it's better used to have it in perennials than it is to have it in row crops. That's pretty similar on the 18 acres. There's a little bit more, some clarion soil, which is a better soil for farming, but primarily it's Harbison Webster's. That actually, because of when we entered this one, the contract on that, I think it starts November 1st, and it's going to be a 10-year and 11-month contract. So at that point, we would reapply. Our intent, I've seen this land farmed for years, and I've seen how much it floods out, and the replanting that can't get done because it's too wet. And my long-term goal and our son's long-term goal is to keep it in perennials because we think it's the best thing for the land. Does that answer your question?
Yes, it does. Thank you.
Yeah, my only question is, so new driveway's got to go in there off 170th. Have we looked at the distances and made sure that we're that over 300 feet?
Yes, we have more than 300 feet there.
Perfect.
Yeah, we haven't talked to Darren yet, but it's been measured out in the survey. We have
and so that's just part of the driveway permit, and I wanted to make sure we weren't going to approve something today and then find out in 2 weeks that we had a problem with the driveway permit.
Rick, it should not be a problem.
Anything else?
No, I think this is what the county should be looking to do, and I would support it.
Good. Anything else? No. Okay, so then we need to consider Resolution 1733.
So move.
Second. We got a motion and a second on approval of Resolution 1733. Any further discussion?
No.
Clinton?
Aye.
Chitty?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Resolution 1733 is adopted. Thanks.
Thanks, Linda.
Thank you.
Very good job. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Next item is discussion and consideration of request to add a new planner position. So I'm going to start this, Jerry, and then you jump in and make your case. Planning and development is down staff no matter how you slice it over the last 6 years. We had an enforcement position. We ended up moving a position out of there to create a new position. When I review Jerry's timesheets every 2 weeks, my big concern with both him and his supervisor is Jerry's working too dang many hours. It can't keep up. Now, there's a reason. It's a good problem that we've got here in Story County that our planning and development department is dealing with as much as they're dealing with. But we've got two realities. One, we're up in terms of actual workload over 6 years in planning and development. And two, we're down in terms of actual positions to accomplish that workload. So I asked Jerry to go ahead. He came to me and said, okay, can we start talking about a new position? And I said, yeah, we can start talking about it. And he said, you want to do it sooner or later? And I said, let's start talking about it right away. And so go.
Right. And with that, I should say that sometimes we feel like hamsters on a wheel kind of thing. This is a request to ask for a new planner position. I'm going to be able to show you that we have had some growth. We've got some data that we can show third quarter information on our department activity for the last 3 years. We also have the data for the entire year, which will be helpful. It's important for us to, looking forward to be able to provide the service and assistance to our citizens that they come to expect. And it's also important for me as the department director to make sure that we don't have staff burnout.
Including your own.
Everybody. And so in looking forward, not only just the way things are trending, but look at things that we've got to do with the implementation of the C2C plan. We've got like 16 activities that we need to do. Some of those are pretty involved. They're not going to be things that are going to be able to be addressed within a week or two or a month or so. So we want to be fresh, we want to be focused, and we want to attack it. So again, we're going to show you the data on that. And here's the actual third quarter information. This is for 2016, 2015, 2014. The first column represents 2016. The number on the top is the total number of permits, what you would expect. The single family dwelling applications are the greatest, or accessory structure, and then with single family dwellings. But overall, for the previous 2 years, we're leading that. Valuation wise, we're up $2.6 million from the previous year for the third quarter comparison, up about $2 million for the previous 2014 quarter. This is property research that we do when people come in. They want to know if their property can be divided for various purpose and uses. We do that, E911 addressing, home business permit applications. So again, overall, with total number of addresses assigned or doing the replacements, we're leading for the previous 2 years, also leading with home business permits. Most of those were renewals. Right now, once they're approved, they resubmit an application for renewal. We're looking at maybe doing just a one-time application and review and letting it ride unless there's issues in the neighborhood. The third thing is property research that we do, and that's the third item. On an annual basis, again, 2016, 2015, 2014, we're up from the previous year. This is everything that we do, the applications, the land development permits, subdivisions, variances, rezonings, all of it. Zoning permits are the greatest category for 2016, followed by the addressing that we do. And then it compares to the 2014 level, and as you mentioned, Rick, in 2014 we had two planners, a director. We shared an administrative services staff person with environmental health, which is what we do today. And then a few years prior to that, they also had somebody in code enforcement. Mm-hmm. This is a comparison. We try to capture, you know, our busiest time of the year, which is it starts up in March, April, but really gets cooking in May through the end of September. So that's what these numbers represent. And again, we're leading in total numbers from the previous 2 years. This is C2C implementation matrix. I'm not going to go through all of these. There's like 16 things that we've graciously been charged with, taken care of, and we welcome the
task. You agreed to do them right after we told you you were doing them.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly how it went. But it's important to note that these are all intermediate, which means they should take anywhere from zero to upwards of 2 years to accomplish. And my goal would be to move most or all of these things to our work program and hit it as hard as we possibly can and get as much of that done the first year. But we've got the lease evaluation. We're supposed to take a look at that. That's something that we've been doing and using for a number of years. So that's going to take some thought and consideration into looking at how can we make that better. Density-based zoning, we don't have that now. So we really need to focus on that and make sure that we get it right the first time. Again, red arrow means those are things that we're responsible for and taking care of with the implementation of the plan. This leads us to the schedule and budget request if this position is supported by the board. The idea is that if it were approved, we would put notification out there, COZO, Iowa APA, the county's website, Iowa State, other sources, November 1 through December 15, take applications, do interviews the first and second week in January, and then hopefully get somebody on board the first or second week in February. Alyssa provided some great assistance on salary and benefits, what that would typically cost. IT, Barb assisted with some expenses. They have phones, but they have to be programmed, computer, monitor, some software that would be needed. That's the total comes to just less than $30,000. So
where would this position be housed?
It would be in our office. I think we have a meeting room right now, and that would become the planner's meeting room. I did speak with Cal Facilities Management, and there's a room across the hall that we think that we could use for our meeting room.
Okay.
We've got two desks in there, so we wouldn't need to buy any hardware, the office desk, so we can move that to our space.
Okay.
We're hoping that we could just convert our meeting room to a planner's office.
Questions for Jerry, and then I want to hear from Deb and Alyssa.
And I guess my question more or less was really coming back to Alyssa, but it, again, it's tied into the timing, as I see here. Estimate start date is in February, which takes us with a few months left in the fiscal year. Ideally, when we talk about new positions, first question always comes up, will this require additional dollars to your present budget? Because normally when you set your budget at during the regular budget time, you look at your existing staff and a lot of the other kinds of things, and I think there was always the intent at some point you would come back and evaluate whether you needed additional staff. I don't think we plugged in necessarily. I can't recall that we did. So I guess part of the question would be is if this is approved, are we looking at trying to absorb this within your existing budget, or will this require us moving additional dollars from the general fund to cover this? So that's more or less a list of question, and I know maybe you've already...
Yeah, I have, it would require additional dollars, but I'll remind you that the way Story County currently budgets, we only budget 94% of projected salary, so we come back during the spring every year and amend dollars into salary. This would be additional dollars that we'd have to amend into salary. Alyssa and Deb, would you guys come up and just talk to us? So Planning and Development reports to Deb Shilberoff, and Alyssa's our HR director. Both of you guys have been instrumental in working through this process. I just want you to give us your thoughts as you look at this.
That was a good point, Wayne. First of all, when you look at the budget for this, we don't really know what the salary would be. We don't know a lot. So those numbers are true budgeted numbers. Looking at the figures, no, those aren't. That's why we outlined and Jerry took a hard look at what exactly the cost would be, so there are no surprises. You know, if this position is approved, we don't want to get to April and think, oh, we didn't figure in licensure fees for software, different things like that. So we tried to make sure we got all the costs associated with the new position and tried to outline that. Probably a little, honestly, a little high because we never know.
So you're estimating a starting salary somewhere in the upper 40s.
And we have to, that's a union position.
Okay.
And the union contract says you can hire between start and third step. So I did utilize the third step.
Did you?
That's most.
Okay.
Yeah. And we don't know what insurance they're going to choose, so it is truly a kind of a swag when we come to. But it's the most that we would spend, and that's how I like the departments to present that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want you guys to be surprised later on in that fiscal year. I do want to touch on the timing of it. Typically, we do look at new positions during the budgeting work session. If we would do that, it would be like a July start date. That would be right in the middle of their busy season.
Yeah.
So we do take that into consideration, too, when the departments, you know, come and we have a discussion is when would you want somebody on board? How long would it take to train them before you get busy? Because we all know if you hire them right during that busy season, which, you know, we have new staff during that time, it is extremely difficult.
Yep, Deb, any thoughts?
Well, I would just add, I'm, of course, in support of this. We've seen assistance through an intern over the busy months. That intern,
he's been recruited to do it, thank goodness.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah.
Worked 40 hours a week full time, and then when that person had to return to school and has reduced their hours, we really see the gap that Jerry and Emily are picking up and trying to meet the needs as best as possible. So I think the data speaks for the need and the direction that's out there and needing to go, and worked with Alyssa and Jerry on putting the information together. So in the board's hands at this point.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Good questions for any of the three. Marty.
I'm going to tell you, my time on the board, I've had, you don't realize where the public will come to you with their concerns, and I know I have gone downstairs and sank Jerry on a property research project here through the course of the summer that made him put aside what he was doing. And as you do see the growth going forward in the county, this has been one of those things that I've always left here thinking, like, well, we sure leave a lot in a few people's hands. And I'd like to point out, just, I mean, looking here, this is a 10,000-foot view, but the fact is you're looking at two resources the board has provided for itself in the time that you have been on the board, Wayne has been on the board, Paul has been on the board, to come to us to acknowledge the growth that we're getting in the county. And these are people that I have enjoyed working with, and the input that we get on a daily basis about subjects great and small. And this brings it to the point that we've had people look at this and into the corners and anticipate any, you know, spendings that we don't budget for.
Mm-hmm.
And I thank Alyssa for what she does And Deb, I can't say it enough. I appreciate it. I think Jerry has justified in my mind that he is in need, and I think I acknowledge that, and I'm in support of it.
Yeah, so I agree with that. I think clearly we've got the need justified. I believe we've got the timing justified. I think the fact that we want to have somebody in-house trained up and ready to go by the time we get to May 1st justifies the timing here. And let me just say, this is an exciting problem for Story County to have. You look at the increase in planning and development work. What does that mean? That means good things are happening in Story County, especially when you look at the real uptick is in residential kind of issues. That's a real shortcoming all over Story County, and it's exciting to me to see that we're on what hopefully is the beginning of a trend to see that growth. And we don't need to be an inhibitor of that growth here at Story County. And if by not having enough staff, we were to artificially slow that down, I think that would be a terrible thing. Wayne, you got any thoughts?
No, you saw it.
Okay. If there's no further thoughts, this is simple action by the board. If you guys are in support of it,
move approval of to add a new position and authorize Alyssa and Jerry and them to continue to work forward with the process to bring someone on board.
And you're supportive as part of that motion. You're supportive of the time frame that they laid out.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Got a motion.
And I give a supportive second.
Supportive second. Further discussion. Jerry, you got anything you want to add before we vote?
Just appreciate your support. I think what Alyssa said, you know, we could wait, but if we do, I think we're going to be behind 4 or 5 months. And if we can get somebody on board sooner, it'll be better for our department.
Yeah. And I just want to underscore, planning and development is down 2 positions over the last 5 years.
Yep.
We're up in workload over the last 5 years. For those reasons, I believe this is the right call.
Right.
Anything further?
No.
Clint?
Aye.
Chief?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Passes. Jerry, thank you.
Thank you, Jerry, for your support.
Let's see here. That gets us no agency reports today, other than we had Veterans Affairs earlier. And other reports, discussion, and direction regarding a potential Kegley Branch Watershed Management Authority as allowed in the Code of Iowa, Section 466B.21-26. Leanne Harder and Kayla Hasper. Hi, Kayla.
Good morning.
Leanne, we've already seen you today once. Hello again. So, let's see. I'll see if I can tee this one up. Story County is really, really fortunate to be an active member and the forming partner of the Squaw Creek watershed, which I struggle saying for some reason. But part of that creation of that watershed authority and the assessment we did there is a realization that we have that's not the end, that's the beginning. And so one of the unique opportunities that I think is presenting itself to us is we have a source of secured funding to take a look at the Kegley branch, but we don't have an authority created for the Kegley branch at this point. So in our last Squaw Creek watershed authority meeting, I asked that these two ladies bring forward to the Board of Supervisors the possibilities for Kegley branch. Have at it.
Good morning again.
Morning.
Morning.
What I have is just a few slides on the history of watershed management authorities, just to baseline knowledge, and then we'll answer any questions that the board has. This is set up through Code of Iowa, Section 22, watershed management authorities created. It really is an offshoot of 2008 to 2010 flooding that occurred statewide. Changes at the legislative level to one form the Iowa Flood Center, and then the Watershed Management Authorities was also a key component of that legislation. Essentially, what that legislation allows is that two or more authorities, local subdivisions, and in this case, the local subdivision is a city, county, a soil and water conservation district, or a water district. It's a new addition after last year's legislation that we don't have in Story County or in this watershed. So again, city, county, or soil and water conservation district. And it just takes two of those entities, and maybe more, but just two of those, sign a 28E agreement according to Code of Iowa Chapter 28E, and form a watershed management authority. It has to be based, they all have to be located in a HUC 8 watershed, which we would all then fall under that.
The HUC 8 is the Skunk River.
Yes.
and Kigley Branch is a Hook 10 unit. The duties are also outlined in the Code of Iowa. Even though it's a watershed management authority, the word authority is not necessarily do justice. It does not really have any true authority. It cannot acquire property by eminent domain. It cannot really allocate monies. It's just really limited in scope. So really the first five up there are the true goals of the Watershed Management Authority: assessing flood risks, assessing water quality, options for reducing flood risk, improving water quality, monitoring federal flood risk planning and activities, and then educating residents about water quality and flood risk. So in this case, again, going back, two or more political jurisdictions may create that Watershed Management Authority. There are several jurisdictions in the Kigley Branch Watershed Management Authority, or in the Kigley Branch Watershed, which is this kind of squiggly boundary that I'm trying to highlight. And then this circle is a really rough representation of those communities and jurisdictions. Story County, Story County Soil and Water Conservation District, Hamilton County, and the Soil and Water Conservation District in Hamilton County, Hardin County, and then again their Soil and Water Conservation District. Then the cities of Ames, Gilbert, Roland, Story City, and Randall. And I think I captured them all.
Yeah, so basically the Kigley Branch hits the Skunk River about where the rest area, the old rest area that would have been the overlook if we had built a reservoir there, north of Ames, and it runs in a northeasterly direction up through Story County.
Yeah, which would be like right in that area. Mm-hmm. You can see how shaky these people are when they hold it. So there was a substantial grant that has been received by Prairie Rivers of Iowa, RCMD, as Rick mentioned. In order to do that, the discussion at Squaw Creek Watershed Management Authority meeting in the past few weeks has been the best approach would be to form a WMA just for the Kigley Branch watershed. So there are some next steps if directions given to staff today and Prairie Rivers to proceed with this. One, we could contact jurisdictions, just a simple letter of interest. This is the same process we follow with the Squaw Creek watershed, not reinventing the wheel. Through that process, we'll be drafting a 28E agreement and send it through the county attorney's office and others for review, develop bylaws. Again, not reinventing the wheel on either of those two things because we have the baseline Squaw Creek Watershed Authority 28E agreement bylaws. Present information to jurisdictions if they are considering joining, and final action, filing all that with Secretary of State, and then our beginning meetings of the Watershed Management Authority.
And this is their board of directors or oversight, whatever we want to call it, would be a separate one from the other one. So,
okay. Right. It'd be two watershed management authorities. Right now, the board of supervisors already serves on two watershed management authorities.
Right.
If you add the Four Mile Creek WMA, which is majority in Polk County,
right.
So it'd be a third one that the four supervisors. But would be one wherein the board would take a lead, similar to the Squaw Creek watershed.
Right, but as far as a potential structure of this, there is no rule that would prohibit two watershed management authorities, two separate watershed management authorities, from meeting together. Now, they have to take action separately,
right. That's
but much like we do in other things, it is possible that we could create something like this. Many of the same entities would be part of, or potentially part of this, as are on Squaw Creek. You could all meet together and take action separately. That would be allowable, voila. And maybe beneficial.
Right. And that might be beneficial, yeah.
Kayla, tell us what you're thinking.
I'm in agreement of all of that, specifically at the convenience of meeting together probably would be more realistic for a lot of parties involved, but definitely could use the support of the Management Authority Board at this point with our new grant creating the plan. So.
So action by this board, if we were interested in taking the lead as we did on the Squaw Creek, would be to give direction for you guys to send out letters of interest to all the potential members of that 28E, and then we hope, and quite frankly we know, that several of them will have interest in forming that 28E. We don't know that all of them would, but we don't need all of them. We just need Story County and one other in order to form it.
Okay.
Okay.
Is that the direction you're looking for?
That is.
Thoughts, Board?
With approval today, how long do you think it would take to bring this to be?
Realistically, 30 to 45 days.
Oh, we can get that done in 2016 then.
Okay. Yeah, so the real beauty here is we're not looking for dollars. We've got the dollars sitting there in the form of the grant. We just don't have an authority that can access those, right?
And correct me if I'm wrong, every community signed off on the grant application except for one, or every jurisdiction except for one?
Yep, those are aware, and they were supportive of the grant when it was written.
So the communication's already been started, now it's just formalizing it with the creation of WNA.
Nothing like the line.
Okay. You good? So then I believe the direction from the Board of Supervisors, and since it is direction, it doesn't require a motion, but it does, I believe, require affirmation. Direction is we would like to draft a letter of interest that goes out to all the potential members of the Cayley Branch Watershed Authority. When we get those letters of interest back and see who's interested, then we'll ask our county attorney to go to work on taking what we have from the Squaw Creek 2080 agreement and developing a new agreement. But the first step is to see what kind of letters of interest we get back.
You want that under Story County letter then? That be initiated by Story County, or would you? I could see a joint letter from Prairie Rivers, Vial, and Story County.
Well, that could be another outreach. You could check with them and see if they wanted to join us in that. But if not, you know, obviously on our letterhead would be appropriate. So I think either way.
So I actually come down the other side, and I would be fine if we go that way. But since Prairie Rivers is the contracting entity that provides the services, I think I would be hesitant to have them. It's almost like they're reaching out to create something that initiates a contract on their benefit. I think it's more appropriate to see this come from Story County and then see what interest we get. It's really up to you guys.
Explain that again. Now, they are
the Prairie Rivers is not, they're not part of the 2080 of this, right? They're the contracting entity that administer the 2080 that we've agreed to. Since they're not part of the 2080, I would be hesitant, Wayne, to have them reaching out requesting the formation of a contract that would benefit Prairie Rivers.
I wasn't aware of that, so that's good.
You got a thought on that?
No, my expectation is by and from the county.
Good. Is that all you need, or do you need something more formal than that?
I'm good.
Okay, we'll see what we get back. Guess we're good there?
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you, Kayla.
Thank you very much. Kayla, you were so talkative. Kayla's done a great job, everybody. She has really stepped in and taken over and is doing a great job, and we're excited to have her as part of this. Okay, next item is discussion and direction. Thank you, guys. Have a great day.
Hey, tell him I think he's awesome, and he ought to get each of you an A for today.
It's always nice to have students in attendance. Discussion and direction regarding solar farms regulation. I will say that the reason that this is coming to us now and not sooner than that now is I've been holding Leanne off. Leanne has been chomping at the bit to get this going for a while. And we've had so much on our plate until we got to the end of Coop Cog. I was really struggling with us taking something like this on as well. Once we got to the end of Coop Cog, I couldn't hold Leanne back anymore. And away we go. I love that we're starting to dig in and address this. So thank you, Leanne.
Yeah, today is the epitome of my job description, I think. I have three very distinct items on your agenda.
Right.
What I'm going to present to you today is just an overview of background information on solar energy, solar farms. And harken back to the days that we did the wind farm regulations and then seek some direction from the board. Please stop and ask any questions as we go forward. This slide, I'm not going to read it, but just for the board's benefit and the audience's benefit, this is a briefing that the American Planning Association, APA, which is our professional affiliation of planners throughout the United States, put together a couple years ago, entitled Solar Briefing Papers and Integrating Solar Energy into Local Development Regulations. It just does set forth the background and the rationale for having solar regulation standards on the books
And just some key statements of this are really like that first sentence. One of the keys to local solar market growth is the support of regulatory environment. And if you do go back to prior to the time that we had wind turbines under construction in Story County, we didn't know how to handle wind turbines, commercial scale wind turbines. And so staff took a step back, drafted regulations for commercial wind energy conversion systems, so CWECs. And lo and behold, following that, we had 100 wind turbine wind farm come through the door, and then expansions of that, and then subsequent applications. Through discussions with those companies, they said what was attractive about Story County was not just our wind resource, because it is, it's marginal, it's good, but it's not as good as some others, was that we had regulations on the books. That was the attraction that drew them. And I am going to share with the board and for the benefit of the public, if you look at CWEC regulations nationwide, not just statewide, nationwide, they are patterned after Story County.
They were, yeah.
And we did set the trend in that regard. I do have just some basic background information, because part of this, too, is a learning curve for me, just like it was with our wind farm development. What is a large-scale, large utility-scale solar farm? We know what wind farms are. It's the same principle. It's that centralized facilities that comprise primary or principal use on the site. And we have them mostly in the western United States. If I have some maps here show soon the availability of solar as a resource throughout the United States. It's just different magnitudes of radiation that we all can experience. On the books, we already have small-scale non-commercial solar energy. Those are the accessory uses. They could be ground-mounted. They could be rooftop. They're permitted accessory uses in several zone districts. Those are for use accessory to sites, so for a house or a business, not the commercial large scale. We've had that for quite a few years, in fact. Just some highlights, some information that Iowa Solar Industry has put together, actually Solar Energy Industries Association. These are September 2016 facts. More than 46 solar companies in the value chain in Iowa that employs about 350 people. We've installed 6 megawatts of solar electric capacity and ranking 32nd nationwide, and we're upward tick on that. Definitely we're one of the leaders in wind, and we see similar growth patterns throughout the state or throughout the nation for solar. $16 million investment in solar in Iowa in 2015. And then again, enough solar energy installed in the state to power 4,000 homes. Over the next 5 years, Iowa's expected to install 146 megawatts of solar electric capacity. If you look at, we're currently at 34 megawatts. That's an immense increase. And then nationwide, installed solar systems, the price has reduced significantly. And that has affected the industry in whole scale, and I'll show that in a graph shortly. Just some information, again, from that report, from the September 2016 report, where is the industry located right now? We have a lot of manufacturers and installers located in central Iowa and the Ames and Des Moines region primarily. And then if you look at the graph on the right, which is the same graph that was on the other page, you do see the upward incline going from 2011 to the projections for 2016. 2014, I believe, there were some new tax credits that hit the books, which would result that, I mean, it's kind of an anomaly how that goes up, but you do see the upward incline in this industry. In the whole solar energy realm, there are two types of energies, or energy technologies. For the life of me, I stumble on this. Photovoltaic. I'm going to just call it
PV. That's good.
PV.
Yeah, I practice it. And then concentrating solar power. There's a lot of information on these two types of activities, and I would encourage anyone that wants really in-depth information to go to the website I've cited below down here, or just Google either one. But the PV systems are the solar array panels that directly absorbs the solar radiation, turns into energy. The CSPs are the larger, like I have an image up there. They're parabolic mirrors. They involve turbines and a lot of additional components that the more I've read about this, that really is an amazing direction in which to go. We don't have the solar radiation necessarily to support that. And the impacts, I think, are beyond what Story County would want to assume through a conditional use permit process to allow these types of uses. So when it gets time to the recommending regulations, I may very well be to the point that we're not suggesting CSPs at all, only the photovoltaic types of solar energy. Still doing research on that, though. So the next few slides do just look at our potential for solar radiation in Iowa for the PV systems. I zoomed in on Iowa here. You do see we're between that kilowatt per square meter, kilowatt hours per square meter, which is how systems are measured and represented as a kilowatt per square meter per day. We're in that midpoint, the 4 to 5 kilowatt per day. It really does, if you compare this to a wind resource map, just kind of look pretty similar to where that shelf lies. The wind resource map, if I recall correctly, it comes a little bit further, and bisects to stay a little bit further south, but it is a similar pattern. But we actually do have, I read an interesting study. Germany is the leading nation in solar resource worldwide. We have more days of solar radiation, or kilowatt hours per square meter per day, than the country of Germany and the state of Iowa. So the potential definitely does exist, and technology has come so far since 40, 30, 20, even 2 years ago. Again, another map. This does really rely more on portray the concentrating CSPs. Again, the availability as a resource is there, but you do see how it is highly effective in the southwestern United States. Similar map again. I'm just showing the trends, and if you can drill down in this one, you can see there's some squares where really Story County does start to jump out. Large criticism of solar throughout Iowa is that we just don't have enough sun year long. It depends on what you're addressing with that statement, but there is technology that's available that we can now move solar systems, energy panels, so that they are mobile enough so that they can attract and be an orientation that's necessary to attract the sun as it is there. And that's what this says. This chart down here shows the degrees on a monthly basis that you would need to place that. And the technology has assumed this and built this into their as they're going forward. So some costs and capacities. I wanted to start by looking at what has happened with wind and just share this with the board. So on the left-hand side is the cost per kilowatt hour. And then the right-hand side is the capacities. And then the bottom is the time frame. So back in 1980, again, knowing this is wind, turbines and components were highly expensive. That cost has declined significantly over the past 20-plus years. As technologies have declined in cost, they've improved in their capabilities, though. We have building more efficient turbines, higher turbines, longer blades, and that has resulted in this increased capacity. The upward tick is set to go off the charts. In comparison, same trend is happening with solar. This is a utility scale, so this is a commercial CSP, similar type of approach, or similar type of trends, but then the photovoltaic EV is on the right side, and the capacity is there, and the costs are really reducing significantly. I did want to just read this. And since 2008, the cost of installing utility-scale PV has dropped from $5.70 per watt of generating power, and this was in 2008, to $2.08 per watt in 2015. That's a reduction of more than 60%. And the technology, just as in the wind farm industry, has increased the capacities or greater the technology allows for a greater generating system. So, going back to that APA, American Planning Association report, it does recommend standards that planners bring to their elected officials, standards that get put on the books that address everything from setbacks to signage to types of processes. There are model ordinances put in there. So with that, I did want to go back and look at how we set forth the CWECs, the Commercial Wind Energy Conversion Systems. We did a lot of hard work in that, and there are some items that can be brought forward, such as putting this through a conditional use permit process for an approval process. Again, knowing these solar systems are on a commercial large-scale utility. The individual residential units are already addressed. We're not talking about those at all. Those are allowed by right through zoning permit, straightforward staff process. Just like CWECs, having supplemental standards, there are some different impacts that go above and beyond our conditional use permit standards for approval that I think would be appropriate to address in regulations. And then again, looking at decommissioning. These have lifespans just like the wind turbines, and we need to be aware that there will be a temporary removal of property from ag land production. And so in the long run, when these are removed, how do we make sure that productivity of the land is not negatively impacted and it can return to as viable ag land? And then submittal requirements. What does planning and development, the Board of Supervisors, or Board of Adjustment and Planning and Zoning Commission need to do to approve these? So some potential standards I've listed on the screen. The ones that are not already addressed in our CWICs are glare, ground cover and buffer areas, solar components, pretty obvious. But otherwise, in some format, these are all part of the CWEC standards, and based on directions today, that's where we would start, looking at those standards and then not reinventing anything, bring it forward as applicable to commercial solar energy systems. So the next steps would be direction to staff to forward all the research we've done and potential ordinance amendments. We'd be amending the conditional use permit regulations, the definitions chapter of the land development regulations as well, forward those on the county attorney's office. I've been working with Jerry and Emily in planning and development as we've started to draft some regulations and see how to take this forward. If timing would allow, possibly a review by the Planning and Zoning Commission in November. We're trying to take it hand-in-hand with some other changes that might be going forth to use our resources wisely and then bring it back to the board in November and December as your schedule allows. Good questions.
Go ahead.
Yeah, so a couple. One, the big hurdle that I see here as much as anything is the beauty about the wind turbines is they're vertical. And so they don't take up as much farm ground. This seems to be a little more horizontal, or much more horizontal, and so we would have a greater impact on our ag ground. Second, seems to me that Johnson County came over Wayne and took a look at what we did with our wind farms, but I believe, if I've been reading right, Johnson is one step ahead on this, and they've already put in an ordinance. Have we looked at their ordinance and some of their things? Maybe turnabout's fair play. So they copied Story County in terms of the wind turbines. Maybe we need to be looking at what they've done so far and hopefully improve it, but take a look at what they've done so far. I don't know if you've done that.
I have, and they have. Actually, they've gone above and beyond having ordinance. They actually have, I apologize, I don't remember how many megawatts, what the capacity is, but they have a large-scale utility solar farm already under construction commission. I looked at Johnson County. I've looked at all of our peer counties, as well as this was a point of discussion on our listserv for county zoning officials, COZO, which I still pay attention to. And Carroll County had done some regulatory modifications to their ordinance, too. So I've been doing that as part of my research. And And beyond that, there's some model ordinances that have been put forward from Minnesota and Wisconsin that are really quite interesting to read from. Mm-hmm. So we have a great beginning with our CWICs.
Okay.
We really do. Mm-hmm.
Wayne?
Not so much as a question, but I'm excited to see that we are really taking a close look at this. Back in September, as part of the ISAC Board of Directors retreat, we went to Cedar Rapids and we had an opportunity to tour one of the facilities that they have there. And not only was this one, there was another one that they had that had a lot to do. They had the solar panels and everything off to the side as their main source of energy, but then their buildings and the grounds around it had a lot to do with stormwater runoff, water retention, where everything had to be self-contained on that land. And what was interesting as part of their initial grant dollars that they received, they have to really monitor and show evidence that everything is being retained on that facility, but you talk about an impressive facility. And I mentioned that to Mike Cox as one of the possible future considerations if we ever thought that the research park and water quality initiatives might be something that we could model after. But they have a facility over there that will be worth us taking a look at and you go over and take a look at some point as well, too.
I'm planning in the middle part of, actually it's going to be the next couple of weekends, going over to Iowa City.
And
just get a visualization of seeing pictures. I've heard their stories. I've heard the horror stories, too. But ultimately, what does it look like? How does it change our horizon, our landscape?
Marty?
This technology is here. All of the above is a great approach for energy within this country. The family of farms where I live, both has installed one of these and is seeing the result of the rewards of it, and one member sold it. I think that the county was ahead of the curve on the wind. I think that here in Nevada, I would say that we market ourselves to the world as a place where energy is well consumed and produced, and any means to further that in whatever medium is to be sought. We need to be a little ahead on this one. I'm glad to see that we were so prescient in the wind side of things, but I'm shamelessly hoping to adopt maybe possibly a good idea from Johnson County. So I think I'm glad that you brought this to us. I think that it will be coming to us, certainly on the residential side of things. Commercially, we should be that lucky.
So I stopped to visit our friends at Better Equipment the other day and got out of the truck. And as I'm walking in, I looked north. And so those of you that haven't driven 30 lately, we've got four new wind turbines, three of them north of Better, but running up toward Lincoln Way Energy and the DuPont Stover plant. And I stopped knowing that this solar was going to turn into a real conversation today. And I just thought about what a cool visual it would be standing there in the Better parking lot looking north, and you've got three wind turbines, you've got a food source ethanol plant, a Stover source ethanol plant, and if we had some type of solar in that picture, you really are running the gamut in terms of renewable energy, and it's really exciting to think that Story County might be in the position to either figuratively or literally do something like that. This is another one of the direction items. I believe clearly, in hearing my two counterparts, the direction is that we need to fully vet this. And so whatever the next steps are, if that is running it through the county attorney's office to start to put together some kind of draft ordinance and the steps we would need to take, I think it's completely appropriate for Story County to do that. Agreement?
Yep.
Absolutely. That's how I said.
Okay.
Enough?
Enough. All right. Thanks, Leanne. Good work.
Thanks for your work, Leanne, here.
Public forum number two is an opportunity for members of the public to comment on items that are not on today's agenda. The board may not take any action due to the requirements of the open meeting law, but we may do so in the future. Anybody? Seeing no one moving to the microphone, liaison assignments and committee meeting updates, Wayne.
No liaison and no committee updates.
Marty.
Well, we've got our quarter meetings here twice this week. Have a follow up with the recreational committee here in East Story County.
and that will be meeting on Thursday. We had some movement. I had the opportunity to conclude a quick school board meeting last night and go to the city council meeting. They think they're seeing some formulation of an idea on what they want to do, both in regards to the rec facility and some housing here in town. So we have good things happening on this side of the county.
Yeah, so really exciting time in terms of residential, specifically on the eastern side of the county with what you've been working on in Colo and now with what Nevada's doing. The Ziering Quadrant meeting, those of you that have a free evening at 5:30 tonight, bring the popcorn. That one's generally pretty entertaining when we hear from our friends in the different quadrants of the county. And any announcements?
Yes. This Thursday and Friday, the ISAC Board of Directors meeting I will be attending in Des Moines. Thursday is also a HRDA board meeting, but I sent notice that I thought that I could be on a conference call to avoid having you have to go down and set in on that, and they are going to just move the action items up early so that I can attend both of those. But the Board of Directors is both a Thursday and a Friday, and we will be kind of synthesizing and recapping our strategic plan and then making approvals that will ultimately come back to the General Assembly in the fall school for a vote on direction for this coming year.
Outstanding. Marty?
None.
All right. Take a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
And we are adjourned.